All right, well, we're going to wrap up Parks and Rec there with that and move on to Division of Wildlife. On number 15, the WDM plan, I think we got John Canta and some other regional suits that are going to help us out with this. John, are you there?
Yes, hello again, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. We have a quick update for you on our wildlife damage management strategic plan. I'll just remind the Commission that you did adopt this plan at your March meeting after a 60-day comment period, taking some additional public comment on the plan. And so we want to kind of drill down with our update today. I'm going to have Emmett Keezer, our regional supervisor in Region 3, talk about goal number one, strategy five in the plan, and then Jack Urimer, our regional supervisor up in the Northeast, will drill down to goal number three, strategy six. And so I'll turn it right over to them, and we'll give you a brief update here.
Good afternoon, Chairman Olson, members of the Commission, Secretary Roebling. First of all, Emmett Keezer, regional supervisor with the Division of Wildlife here in Sioux Falls. Before I start, I just want to thank the Commission again for coming down on behalf of Jeff Van Meter and my counterpart for the Parks Division. We really appreciate having you guys here this morning, and well, it took time away from your busy schedule to be down here last evening and be available this morning. So thanks for spending time with us today. I think it was real helpful. It really helps us to hear some questions and feedback and have some dialogue and interaction with you on some of these projects and challenges we face on some of these areas. So thanks for spending the time with us. What I'd like to talk about, as John mentioned, our strategic plan with the wildlife damage program. One of the important components, of course, resulting from the governor's review and the utilization of the Wildlife Management Institute and putting that report together that looked at all the strengths and weaknesses of our program and then developed some recommendations. But in addition to those nine questions that were posed by the governor's office to WMI, WMI actually came back and said, you know, one of the maybe more important aspects of things that you can do to improve customer service and the delivery of program services would be to develop a recruitment orientation and training program for your new wildlife damage specialist. And if we took that to heart and have been working here over the last year, putting that together, and a little challenge with COVID again, with the inability for staff to get together, but we have put together a work team and they've met on a few occasions, only once, unfortunately, back in February prior to COVID, but we were able to make some pretty significant progress, and we got a few loose ends to tie up with this program, and certainly we'll do that here in the next month or two and as our primary predator and nuisance animal trapping season winds down. As you know, the WDS position itself is a pretty unique position within our agency, much like our conservation officer positions, however, because, you know, any small community that you go to in South Dakota, everybody knows who the game warden is, and everybody knows who the wildlife damage specialist or the trapper is. And so they conduct a lot of outreach and public engagement, and we really look forward to having those staff out there to be our liaison with the public in all those areas. And it's a critical role. And not only will the training that we've developed, you know, provide the important and necessary skills to be successful as a wildlife damage specialist, but to also provide those communication skills training and community relationship building efforts and direction to ensure that we have you know, good engagement in our various communities. WMI, you know, their focus, you know, in addition to some of the other aspects, they did encourage us to continue working with young people. You know, they see young trappers as potentially candidates for these WDS specialists, and certainly they will be in the future. So they encourage us to look at ways that our damage specialists could work with local groups and individuals to promote interest in trapping. We, of course, are in the throes of developing that onboarding training and mentoring program. But we also, you know, oftentimes hire staff, some of which have extensive training and experience in trapping, but some don't have much of that background. They go to South Dakota State, get a degree in wildlife and fisheries, but don't have the extensive trapping experience. So providing that training to some of these newly hired people is going to be really critical for us to be successful. In terms of the process, again, we put together a work team that was comprised of some supervisory staff, some of our WDSs, and then Mark Ohm and I kind of headed up the team to start the discussions. The idea was that we wanted to build a customizable training program, one that, you know, we could customize for each of the work districts. As you move across South Dakota, the big issue is that we have a lot of different work districts and work commands. In the Northeast, you know, you might be working on coyotes one day or beavers one day, but Canada geese are a big issue, as are deer depredation issues in the wintertime. So those that customizable training process is really critical. The onboarding program should also allow new employees to begin delivering WDM services as quickly as possible. That's one thing that's somewhat unique and different from our conservation officer training program. That program, we bring those staff on, train them actually for about a period of 7 or 8 months before they're actually placed in a district. With vacant WDS duty stations out there, what that leaves is producers without services. And so the challenge we have in training these new employees is we want to get them on the ground, we want to get them acquainted with their communities fairly quickly. We also understand that we've got to follow up pretty quickly with some training as well. Our long-term goal is to utilize that vast amount of experience and knowledge that we have in our existing WDS staff. Many of these guys have decades of work experience, and I frankly would put them up against the best trappers in the world in terms of their techniques and skills. We want to also partner, you know, with those technical skills on trapping and dealing with various sorts of wildlife damage issues and requests for service. We want to marry that up with good community relationships, building skills too. So that's going to be a part and parcel of this entire effort. We also, through this process, have revised our hiring process and the format that we use for advertising for positions. And we came up with some new interview questions and revised our interview and selection process too. The program itself has three primary components. I'm not going to go into great detail with each of these components, but you know, the onboarding process is something generally the supervisors will handle over the first 3 or 4 weeks of their hire. You know, they do the suite of paperwork that we have to complete to do the hiring process. They'll get into statutes and regulations that are important, agency policies, procedures, contracts and forms and reports that are required. They undergo some basic first aid and safety training, learn about their equipment, and some of them are very familiar with things like firearms, but maybe not as familiar with things like traps or operation of ATV. So it's important that they get that safety training early on. We want to outline the important communication processes that need to go on with between the trappers and the supervisors. They can't just go out and do their job. They also have to communicate with their neighboring WDSs. And, of course, communication with producers is really critical for their ability to be successful. And the supervisor during that time period will also go out and probably conduct some kind of a meet-and-greet opportunity. A lot of times they get pictures in the paper, local newspaper, and it's a good opportunity to introduce the trapper to the community. But more than that, you know, there are also other opportunities where they can actually interact with the groups of producers. The next 6 to 8 weeks would be the field training process itself, where we'd ask to designate trainers, those staff that want to provide this training. Oftentimes we will compensate them for training. We do that with we call them our WTOs, the field training officers, the conservation officer training program. And again, they'll learn those basic field skills, tactics, techniques, akin to trapping, aerial hunting.
Bad. Just a second.
Anyway, and again, customer service will be a part and parcel to that that effort as well. And again, you know, we have a variety of folks that we hire. Some come to us with just extensive backgrounds in trapping. Some have virtually no trapping skills. And so that customizable aspect of training is going to be really important. The one overriding factor that in this training, because of the uniqueness of our staff having to deal with very different and the unique service calls at each and every situation, is that we want to ensure that they are provided training that emphasizes critical thinking skills and problem-solving skills. And so that's going to be real front and center to the efforts that we have. And that really is the approach we've taken with our conservation officers as well. I listed just some of the primary topics that staff would receive training on during that time period. Won't go into the details, but you can see it's a whole suite of issues. You know, everything from trying to identify sign where these animals are coming from that are causing the damage, use of those various types of equipment pieces and tools, and our newest thermal imaging devices. But lots of tactics and techniques that are critical to them being successful in those jobs. They also conduct a lot of wildlife surveys for our staff, biologists, and they play an important role in our season setting process as well. Two exercises that we basically have stolen, at least thus far, from our conservation officer training program are called the problem-based learning exercise and a district training exercise. So problem-based learning is a method of training that uses real-life complex, ill-structured problems with no readily apparent or simple solution that really challenges the WDS to ask questions and hypothesize, dig out information, and again, it really focuses on that critical thinking and problem-solving aspect of training. Once they have this process down, they can tackle darn near any project or program issue that's out there in terms of a damage challenge. So the other thing is utilizing that district training exercise is this one tool to help build that community relationship that is so critical, not only to the success of our local WDS, but in terms of the image of our agency out there in the field. Final process is something that is not used with the conservation officers at this time, but I think something that would be very valuable long-term for those staff to utilize as well, and that's the mentoring process. You know, acquiring those skills is one thing, but honing those skills and really building on and refining those skills in various areas, whether it's techniques or tactics, are really important. And that's where a mentor comes in. And so we're going to be utilizing a mentoring process that will pair up a WDS long-term with a mentor who can help them improve their effectiveness over time. They'll also be helping them identify what, you know, success looks like, hopefully helping instill confidence in them in this chosen career field. But if we can instill that passion and ensure that we have good communication skills out there amongst those staff, you know, and a person that they can go to, someone that they can develop trust in and will help them promote collaboration and be a special part of the team, will help, I think, in the long run to retain those employees as well. So anyway, it's just a synopsis of the efforts that we're putting forth here. This program hopefully will be rolled out in the next couple of months. The aspect that we haven't tackled and quite perfected yet is exactly how we're going to appoint and utilize our trainers and mentors. And so that's the final piece of the puzzle that will be put together here over the next couple of months. So we think it's an important part of the overall process, and so we're excited to get it on the ground and really professionalize and put in place a more formal approach to training for these staff. Thank you. Are there any questions, Mr. Chair? I'd be happy to take them. Anybody have any questions for him?
John, are you on the line here? I think we are number 16, AIS field operation update from John.
Mr. Chair, Jackie has just a quick addition to this, and then we'll be done with number 15. Sorry.
Okay.
All right, are you ready? Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, well, thank you, and good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, Secretary Roebling. I'll make mine quick here. Again, I'm Jackie Ermer, the Regional Wildlife Supervisor up in the Northeast. I'm just going to give a quick update on another one of the goals of the Wildlife Damage Management Plan here that Emmett just talked about, and this one is goal number 3, which is to mitigate livestock and property loss through the effective delivery of wildlife damage programs, and specifically strategy 6, which is to identify opportunities to improve efficiencies in the delivery of our program. So this one actually is very exciting for us. One of the action items under this was to review our kind of our depredation permit process and how we issue kill permits, and trying to get an electronic form on our website. And just excited to say that this has finally happened with the help of our GIS staff, specifically Nikolai O'Hara, just excellent in getting this developed and online and ready to go for our goose depredation season that started several months ago. So happy to say that now we have an online process for a producer or a landowner if they have issues with the Canada geese depredating on their soybeans. So to say, they can go online now to apply for a goose depredation permit so they can haze geese and lethally remove up to 10 geese if they need to on their property to reduce damage that the geese are causing. So before, it was all done on paper and through the mail, and it took several days. So this process has really sped that up. And we've had, especially in the Northeast here, we've had about 250 of these goose permits issued already and approved, and it usually takes a day or less, so much faster than the paper version. We've heard good things from producers that have used it, said, yes, it's so much faster. Just go on our website, type in the information, same thing as same information that you would have filled out on paper, but it's all on there, and then it gets batched and sent over to our program manager and gets approved and emailed right back out to the landowner so they can start using it. So that in a nutshell is a success story for strategy 6 of goal 3 in our wildlife damage strategic plan here. I can go, if you have any questions about the Canada goose depredation permit process, you can sure ask, but I believe I'm going to be attending the commission meeting in July when it's in Watertown, and probably be talking a little bit more in depth about goose depredation, so we can go into more detail about goose depredation in July. But I'll take any questions if you have them right now.
Great. Thanks so much for the update. Any questions? John Locken.
Not a question, but just a comment, Jackie. I was glad to see that the producer could designate somebody to help him, that it didn't have to be him himself. He could designate a person. That was really helpful.
Yes, through the chair. Yep, that's a producer, landowner can... is usually the one that fills out the permit, but they can have at least 2 designees to help. And that's how it's been, I guess, for quite a few years, and definitely has been helpful because some producers just are not able to do it themselves. So the designees are helpful.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Whitmire.
Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, Jackie, hi. This is Commissioner Whitmire. Yeah, thank you on that program. Myself and neighboring producers are very appreciative of the department for making that program happen, where we can haze those geese, you know, not intending to do damage, but boy, if you don't move them
they learn very quickly where it's safe and where it's not, and it's a great tool to get them moving on and going to places where they're not going to do that damage. So I just want to share that it's very much appreciated, and thank you for the work you do on that.
Thanks. Good to hear that feedback.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Spring.
I was going to ask, and I don't know if Jackie can answer, but maybe Emmett can. With the wildlife damage program, is it still, can you still get a kill permit for a lot of deer damage? Years ago, I know it was put into place where there was a limit of 10 could be killed. Is that still on the books? Is that still going?
Jackie, do you want to
take
answer?
Take this, Emmett, left you there. I can't see if you're at the mic or not.
I can go ahead and handle it. Yeah, Mr. Spring, through the chair, yes, it is still available, and that is still a tool that we will utilize, you know, that depredation pool hunts. And we do have what we call a standing kill permit. So when our conservation officers or wildlife damage staff come out, we've got deer on a haystack or causing damage. Sometimes one of the best and first responses is to actually take those deer. So we do have the ability to do that immediately. And that's something we put in place probably 15 or more years ago. But we can issue, you know, permits to landowners as well. That is something that can be done through state law. But in addition to that, there are probably many, many other tools that we have today that we didn't have years ago. I think 20, 30 years ago, we probably showed up with a roll or two of snow fence, dumped out the back of the pickup, and that was about the sum total of our assistance. But now we have contracted stack yards. We've got temporary panels we can deliver to producers, put around, for example, a corn pile or some silage or whatever they might be feeding that the deer are getting into. Lots of different tools available, but yeah, the kill permit still is one tool that's available.
I know it was still on when I was on the depredation committee 20 years ago. I just wanted to check that still was that way. Thank you.
Any other questions, Jackie or Emmett or anyone that we got here? Otherwise, we can